contents of the bowl into the corridor. The water splashed the prisoners down below, and there was a chorus of profanity, which caused Ripper to titter. She sat beside X once more.
"Tell me about this girl you love," she said.
"Quickly now, before the guard comes to reject me."
"Had you told me such a person existed," he said, "I would have called you a liar."
"Is that so?" said Ripper, arching an eyebrow. "Without pausing to think, tell me three things you especially love about this astounding creature."
X thought for a moment.
"Without pausing to think," said Ripper. "I should have thought the rules of this game were plain enough."
"Her strength," X began. "But three is too few. I cannot do her justice."
"Oh, do stop your whinging," said Ripper.
"Very well," said X. "Her strength, her blurting, her face."
"Her blurting?"
"I cannot describe it."
"Please don't," said Ripper.
"Yes, well, all that does indeed sound like love. At least as it was described to me once upon a time. As I have said, love was not a sea I myself ever swam in."
A guard loped down the corridor now, rattling his club against the bars. Ripper readied her things to leave, and X rose up on his elbows to gaze around the cell. The purple shirt with the wild white stitching had been returned to him. It lay folded on the ground by the door. He was shocked to see it again.
"A guard returned it while you slept," said Ripper.
"The fact that your mother was a lord is now a well-traveled secret."
X lowered himself to the ground again. The footsteps outside grew louder. He knew, from the scrape of a dragging foot, that it was the Russian.
"What do you think the lords will do with me?" said X.
"There will be a trial of some sort, I would think," said Ripper.
"Dervish will insist that you be shredded by lions or something equally theatrical."
"Still, you are an innocent soul, and the son of a lord. That makes you a special case.
In truth, I wonder if the lords even have the authority to punish the likes of you. As you know, there is a higher power that rules this place, and the lords quake before him. Or her, as I like to imagine it."
The guard drew close.
Ripper spoke quickly.
"At the trial, you will be allowed to speak but once," she said. "Apologize for your actions in words as honeyed as you can manage. Perhaps they will let you remain a bounty hunter, and, eventually, turn their back on you long enough for you to visit your blurting girl. You are aging, unlike the rest of us. I should hate to see you rot in this cell until there is no skin left to make a bag for your bones."
Her speech finished, she placed a motherly hand on X's cheek. Her palm was raw, yet he felt its warmth.
"I have enjoyed our conversation," Ripper said. "It's been years since I spoke so many coherent words in a row."
"Thank you for your counsel," said X.
He smiled gratefully, and found he was not ready to let her go.
"Ripper," he said.
"Yes."
"I wanted to say," he began awkwardly. "I wanted to say that I very much like your dress."
"Well, thank you, kind sir," she said,
looking pleased and brushing some dirt off the decaying embroidery.
"In truth, it was never particularly dear to me.
But I did not know when I laced it up on that last morning that I was dressing for eternity."
The Russian twisted the key in the door and entered the cell. The lantern threw a faint light on his powder-blue tracksuit.
"It's time," he said. "Party over. Now we cry, boo-hoo."
Ripper gave X a final nod, then contorted her face into the mask of insanity she had invented for the Lowlands. It was as if someone entirely new inhabited her body. X watched in admiration as she spun around, hissed at the guard like a feral cat, and swept back to her cell. The days passed, but X's bruises were slow to fade. His skin remained a landscape of purple, yellow, and blue. Soon, though, he was strong enough to pace in his cell and do simple exercises. He still daydreamed about Zoe constantly, but he managed to divert his thoughts, as a town might divert a river, from losing her to finding her again. One day, as usual he could not have said if it was morning or night, X awoke to the sound of a rusty key scraping in the lock. A squad of guards stood huddled outside. They were the same ones who had abandoned him on the plane. The squat chief in the turtleneck and red tie stepped forward and helped X off the ground.
"Been meaning to apologize, I have," he said. "Me and the men behaved poorly with respect to you. Cowardly like. You deserve better."
The guard was only groveling because he'd learned that X's mother had been a lord. Still, X had no appetite for cruelty.
"Thank you," he said. "I could not ask for a more sincere apology."
"Been practicing," said the guard.
The guard gestured for X to follow and steered him toward the wide rock staircase. The prisoners rattled their bars and hollered as they passed.
"Where do you take me?" X asked.
A cloud passed over the guard's face.
"Promised I wouldn't tell," he said.
"I understand," said X.
"But seeing as how you've been so gracious about the other matter, I'll tell you anyway," said the guard. "The waterfall what feeds the river, you know it?"
"Yes," said X.
"Well, behind it," said the guard, "there's a tunnel. And at the end of the tunnel there's a kind of meeting hall, like. Very grand it is. The lords do their business there. They're shouting and law-making and whatnot."
He paused as X negotiated the first step down.
"I'm told they're all waiting for you. They've been handling assorted matters all day. But you're to be their main course."
The waterfall rained down so fiercely that X could hardly penetrate it. Finally, with the help of two guards, he emerged into a long stone passageway he had never seen before. No one spoke. The only noises were the crackling of torches, the echoing of boots, and the dripping of garments as they walked. X knew they must be drawing close to the meeting hall. So many lords congregating together sent out an unmistakable energy, a pulse like a hive of bees. As if to confirm X's suspicion, the passageway began to transform. The walls had started out as ugly, rough-hewn rock. But the farther the company walked, the more polished the tunnel became until it shone like silver. There were enormous gems embedded in the wall now, too. They flickered and winked as the guards passed by with their torches. At the end of the tunnel, there was an ornately carved blue door. Two sentinels with terrifying black rifles stood in front of it. The sentinels were a higher species than the fleshy, bumbling guards, and barely acknowledged them. They turned to the door with choreographed precision and pulled it open without a word. X passed through the door and was hit with a burst of light. He and the guards had entered a stunning white amphitheater made entirely of marble. The lords, hundreds of them, sat in a circle around a small stage. Their clothes so colorful and fine they looked almost like plumage. They stopped talking when they saw X. They watched as he was led down the steps to the stage. The stage was empty except for a single stone seat and a podium. The guards, trying to impress the lords, pushed X roughly into the chair and streamed single file back up the steps. X's eyes slowly adjusted to the light. The walls were like the inside of a pyramid, carved with thousands, maybe millions of words and drawings, as well as an immense map that seemed to represent every inch of the prison. The ceiling was a huge, transparent dome, above which the lowland's wide river rushed without a sound. X hadn't been seated long when the stone chair began to revolve so that no matter where the lords were seated, they had a chance to inspect him. The crowd quickly bored of this, however, and broke into 100 conversations. The chair continued to turn. It moved slowly, then quickly, then slowly again. X listened to the belligerent shouting, the jagged laughter, the angry stomping of feet. He watched queasily as the faces streamed by in a never-ending loop. He was waiting for the trial to begin. And then it struck him. This was the trial. He fought the urge to panic. He searched the crowd for Regent, but couldn't find him. Surely Regent was there. Surely. He wouldn't abandon him now. X kept searching. There were so many lords. Their robes were flapping. The golden bands at their necks were glinting. Dervish sat in the middle of a row, laughing wickedly with his fellow lords. Were they laughing at X? At last, amid the confusion, a lord no taller than a child mounted the stage. X watched as he stepped behind the podium and hushed the crowd. In a high, nervous voice, the lord announced that they would now hear final arguments before voting on whether the prisoner was to remain a bounty hunter or be locked away forever. Final arguments. X's mind reeled. He was dizzy from the motion of the chair. His purple shirt was damp with sweat. The gash in his leg seemed to glow beneath the bandage. He closed his eyes, and when he opened them, he saw Regent. At last. The lord rose from his seat and approached the stage. Before Regent addressed the audience, he leaned down to X and confirmed what Ripper had said. X would be allowed to speak, but only once. X saw the sympathy in the lord's eyes and was moved by it. Without thinking, he whispered, "You have been so kind to me. Might I know your true name?" The lord was shocked by the question. He turned away without answering. Regent told his fellow lords he was disgusted that they were even contemplating further punishments to the soul who sat before them. He reminded his audience that, though X had committed no crime, he had spent his life in the lowlands, that he had learned to crawl and walk and speak in a cell barely bigger than his body. Of course he had been tempted to run. Of course he had fallen in love. It was a stirring speech. The lords seemed rapt by it. Regent talked about X's mother, about the rare blood that ran in his veins, about the appalling torture he had suffered on the plain. X longed to speak on his own behalf, and was afraid he'd miss his chance. He remembered Ripper telling him to grovel. He practiced silently in his head. "My lords, my actions have been disgraceful. I beg to remain a hunter, so that I might continue to serve you. I recant everything, and everyone else. My only love is the lowlands." He loathed every word, and meant none of them. When Regent finished, there was a light rain of applause. Dervish, who seemed to live in a perpetual state of outrage, was so scandalized that he didn't even bother taking the stage to give his rebuttal. He pushed past the lords seated next to him and began shouting from the aisle, "This knave must not and cannot remain a bounty hunter," he declared. "He has already revealed what weak, lovesick stuff he is made of. He has already betrayed us. And yet some of us would let him remain a hunter and stroll the overworld at his leisure. Nay, I say, nay, nay, nay." Dervish expected his own round of applause. But after that bizarre string of nays, Regent said loudly, "Forgive me, but has a horse entered the room?" Laughter rippled through the chamber. Dervish stood hunched in the middle of the aisle, recalculating his plan of attack. A thought came to him. X could see it register in his eyes.
"The truth," bellowed the vile lord, "is that this knave does not even desire to remain a bounty hunter. All he truly desires is to nuzzle his slut. I should have murdered her when I had the chance, and I may murder her yet."
X rose from his seat. He was so furious and dizzy he could barely see. Regent tried to calm him.
"He bluffs in the hopes of enraging you. Do not be provoked."
But X could hear nothing but the blood pounding in his ears. He stumbled off the stage and lurched down the aisle toward Dervish.
"If you lay a hand on Zoe," he cried, "I will make your face even uglier. With a rock."
"You are hardly in a position to hinder me," taunted Dervish. "I shall lick her neck if it pleases me."
Regent flew down the steps to hold X back. But, dizzy as a child spun around during a birthday game, X lashed out at Dervish with his fist. He struck Regent instead. A gasp flew up from the lords. The sentinels raced forward with their rifles. X looked to Regent, whose face was a mask of fury and surprise.
"I never intended," said X.
Regent raised a palm to silence him.
"You have spoken," he said.
His tone suddenly clipped and officious.
"And you may not speak again."
X collapsed back into the stone chair. All was lost. He would never be a bounty hunter again. He would never see Zoe. His insolence might even cost her family their lives. He gazed at the bandage on his leg. Blood rose through it like a little lake. To distract himself, he pressed his fingertips into it and felt the pain rush through him. Maybe, with Ripper's help, he could prevent the wound from ever healing, so that he could jab at it forever, a permanent reminder of his loss. When it came time for the lords to vote, Regent helped him out of his chair.
"Be silent, no matter what occurs," the lord told him. "I have done all that I can."
X forced himself to look out at his judges. Few of them returned his gaze, which told him everything he needed to know about his fate.
The diminutive lord who'd opened the proceedings called out the official referendum in his reedy voice.
"Shall this soul remain a bounty hunter? Yea or nay?"
A nay was shouted, and then another, and then two more. X felt as if he were watching his future with Zoe vanish and die. He had promised to return to her unless two worlds conspired against him. What a reckless promise. All it had taken was his own anger and pride, his own voice leaping out of him unbidden. He tried to shut his ears to the proceedings. Yet listening to his own thoughts was no less misery. How long would it take Zoe to admit to herself that X had failed her? That he was never coming back? The ninth, or was it the tenth, nay was bellowed out. X hoped Zoe knew that he loved her. He couldn't swear he had actually said those words. When he had kissed her, every part of him was flooded with feeling. Had she known it? Would she remember? Or would she decide that he had never cared for her? Might it be better if she did? His mind ached. Every question was like dry wood exploding in a fire. He could ask Banger to take Zoe a message when Banger was sent to retrieve another soul. Banger was a loyal friend, that was clear. He would do it. But what would the message say? The words, "I'm sorry," were so small. Regent voted in X's favor, and X felt an absurd flutter of hope. Three more nays followed. X was surprised how much they stung him even now.
He needed this to end. It was torture.
The lords had grown tired of the vote. They began standing and pushing toward the aisle. The man-child behind the podium shouted for order. They ignored him and jostled each other. X wondered how such a pack of adolescents could rule the lowlands.
And then it struck him. They didn't rule the lowlands. Not really.
Ripper's words came back to him. The lords answered to the higher power. Suddenly, X heard a voice cry out,
"I question your authority!"
He was shocked to discover that it was his own. Regent shook his head violently, reminding X that he was forbidden from speaking again. But X would not be silent. Zoe wouldn't have been.
"I question your authority!"
Every head turned.
"On what grounds?"
said the little lord. X stole a look at Regent, hoping for encouragement. The lord gave him the slightest of nods.
"On the grounds,"
he began slowly.
"On the grounds that you do not have the right to judge me. For I am the son of a lord."
Silence swept the cavern. Ripper had counseled X well.
"There is one who rules over even you," X continued. "Only he has the power to punish me. Only he can decide my fate. Ask him to judge me, if you dare."
Banger hung on every word of X's story. The guards had ushered him back to his cell, and they could not get their fill of his tale either. They stood clustered in front of the bars, openly admiring X's courage.
"The bollocks on him, imagine!"
And soaking up every detail in amazement. Ripper danced noisily in her cell, feigning madness. But X knew that she listened and was proud. As for X himself, he careened between ecstasy and shock. He tried to calm his blood, reminding himself that his fate was still uncertain.
"You said, I question your authority?"
Banger asked, not for the first time.
"You seriously said that?"
"Desperation drove me to it," said X.
"And then what happened?"
said one of the guards, who had a wizened old face like a shrunken apple.
"My am I figure?"
"The lords exploded into debate," said X. "The noise was terrible. The lords circled me, outraged by my insolence. They threatened me with medieval punishments. Dervish stuck his nose within inches of my face and asked if I was aware of how many different ways there were to skin a human body. But I was so inflamed with righteousness that he did not scare me, and I let him know it by replying, calmly as I could, 7? This brought a round of laughter. "Despite the lord's fury," X continued, "no one suggested that they did have the authority to judge me. I grew bolder and bolder, and began exclaiming, 'Ask him to judge me! Only he can judge me!' Once, I believe I even shouted, 'Can he hear us now? Is he listening? Tell him that he must answer!' I was demented. Then, suddenly, amid the chaos, something so peculiar happened that I do not know how to credit it." X was silent for so long his audience squealed in frustration. "The chamber itself seemed to awaken in some way," he said at last. "The river that rushed over our heads darkened. The walls became slick with moisture, as if they were made of skin. Then they took to vibrating. It was a mere tremor at first, but it grew steadily, and was soon accompanied by, again, I hardly know how to describe it. It was accompanied by a hum. It began as a sort of growl, like something issuing from the belly of a beast.
But the hum grew higher and higher, and soon it was transformed into a piercing sort of whistle. I cannot begin to relate how unkind a noise it was. It was like a spike driven into our ears.
"I have heard that very sound," said the shriveled apple. "Oh, you never did," said the stout chief.
I saw fear transform the lord's faces. "Even regents," said X. He ordered the sentinels to remove me from the chamber. I resisted, for the lords had not yet informed me of my fate. But the place was in such a tumult that I could do nothing to further my cause. As I was hurried away, I turned back toward the lords for a moment. I do not suppose you will believe this, but I saw that the gold bands the lords wear about their necks had commenced to glow. All at once, the lords dropped their hands from their ears and clutched at the collars as if they were being choked. The sentinels and I had to push past one of the lords to exit the chamber, and the last thing I saw was a curtain of blood sliding down his neck. X's last words landed in silence. Then, yet again, the shriveled apple felt compelled to speak.
"I seen that meself," he said. "I seen that very thing."
The stout guard turned.
"Liar," he said wearily. "All right, fair enough," said the apple. "However, I have many a time seen their lordships strain and tug at them gold bands, as if they was a nuisance."
In the cell next door, Ripper stopped carrying on and surprised the party by interjecting.
"Mr. Ugly has struck upon a truth," she said. "Those gold bands are not signs of power, or rather not just signs of power. They are chains."
"Well stated," said the apple. "Being called Mr. Ugly hurts a person's feelings, but I will let it pass, as you are a well-known loony."
Before Ripper could respond, Banger warned them of movement on the plain below. Regent was pacing on the rocky ledge. X could not make out his features, but his agitation was clear.
"Right," said the chief of the guards. "We better be off, then. Come along, Mr. Ugly."
X stared down at the plain as the squad lumbered off. Regent was brooding and pacing in such a tight loop that it looked as if he might wear a groove into the rock. X knew he would come to him, and soon. Yet he could not imagine what news he would bring. The dark feeling in his heart told him it would not be good. At last, Regent stopped pacing. He turned to the vast black rock of cells and leaped toward X, landing in front of his cell with a tremendous thump and a blast of air. He motioned X toward the bars.
"I have been commissioned to tell you that you must bring the lowlands one more soul," he said. "If you fail to locate this final bounty, if you grow sentimental and release him, as you release Stan, or if you waste a single instant chasing your newfound love, you will never leave the lowlands again. You will never even leave this cell."
"And if I do precisely as I am instructed?" said X. "If I bring the soul back on his knees, then I can remain a bounty hunter?"
"No,"
said Regent. He took a pause that seemed endless, before continuing. "Then you can be free." It took X a long moment to find his voice.
"Free," said X. "Forever? I have never heard of such a thing."
"Nor have I," said Regent. "But you are innocent, and the son of a lord. You were never meant for a cage. Perhaps this is the lowlands' attempt at justice. I do not mean to appear ungrateful, for you have been a great ally to me," said X. "But I fear this is a trap."
"Then pray it is not," said Regent.
and I will pray with you.
The Lord made sure no one was watching, then slipped his hand through the bars and shook X's firmly.
What I am about to reveal to you, you must never breathe to another soul, he said. Do I have your word?
You do, said X.
Of course you do.
I owe you the world.
Very well, said Regent. My true name is Tarik.
Part 3. Promises to Keep. 12. Zoe tried sleeping in a dozen positions, as if she were inventing an alphabet with her body. Outside, the trees rustled peacefully, and a breeze brushed the window. The world was returning to normal, as if the word normal still meant something. Whole days had slipped by since X had left. There would be school tomorrow. School. How absurd was that? Whenever Zoe felt a wave of sadness about to hit, she remembered how she'd stood in her socks in the driveway, how X had put his coat around her shoulders, how he'd pulled her body toward him. His mouth had been so warm, it had made her lips glow like the ring on a stove. At midnight, her door creaked open, and Jonah crept in, along with a cone of yellow light from the hall. Zoe pretended to be asleep. Dealing with her brother was not on her list of priorities. She let out a loud snore.
I know you're awake, said Jonah. Duh.
Zoe snored louder.
Faker,
said Jonah. After a moment, he added,
Where's X? Why isn't he back? I liked it when he was here.
Zoe groaned and sat up in bed.
He had to leave, she said. You know that bug. But like, leave? Said Jonah. Forever leave?
His voice faltered. The reality of the situation flooded through Zoe, too. Maybe she'd never see X again. Maybe their kiss had been so engulfing, so singular, because it would be the only one.
I don't know about forever, she said.
All I know is that he wants to come back, and that he's stubborn, like us. Jonah seemed to accept this. He approached the foot of Zoe's bed and prepared to burrow under the blankets.
No, Bug, she said. You can't sleep here. Not tonight.
He didn't think she was serious. He lifted the covers.
No, Bug, she said, snatching away the sheet and blanket.
Jonah left the room without a word, trailing a cloud of hurt. Zoe fell back onto the bed. Through the wall, she could hear Jonah push open their mother's door and say,
Zoe is the worst. Can I snuggle with you?
Zoe changed positions yet again. She missed X. There was a lake of pain where her heart should have been. And now she felt guilty, too. Up on the roof, a clump of snow broke apart. It slid down the shingles, dropped past the windows like a body falling, and landed in the snow with a thunk. She was never going to sleep. Exasperated, Zoe sat up and hurled her pillow across the room. It struck the shelves above her desk and sent some trophies clattering to the floor. She tried to assess the damage, but, in the darkness, could only identify an award for best sheep shearer among the casualties. The trophy was of a golden, half-naked sheep. It was one of Zoe's favorites because it reminded her of Val, who shaved the left side of her head. Val was so gorgeous she could get away with it. Zoe had bought the trophy at a thrift store in Columbia Falls. The man behind the counter, he'd been dozing and she had to wake him up with the shiny hotel bell, was so surprised that someone wanted the thing that he said,
For real?
Zoe banged the back of her head against the wall in frustration. Once, twice, three times.
Her mother must have thought she was knocking because she knocked back.
It was a comforting sound. Zoe realized she didn't really want to be alone. The door to her mom's room stood open. Zoe entered tentatively, wondering if she'd be turned away. Her mother and Jonah lay huddled under the blankets, whispering like conspirators. Jonah heard Zoe's footsteps and lifted his head.
"This room is for sad people only," he said.
He'd been crying.
"I'm sad too," said Zoe. "I promise." Jonah put on his frowny thinking face. Finally, he nodded. Zoe went to the foot of the bed and tunneled under the blankets like a gopher, for Jonah's benefit. When she popped her head out, she saw him snuff out a smile he didn't want her to see. Zoe settled against the wall so that she and her mother lay shielding Jonah like parentheses.
"Your body's so warm," she told him.
"I get warm when I'm sad," he said. "Because of science."
Zoe and her mother took turns patting Jonah's hair. A clunky metal fan that their mom used to lull herself to sleep spun noisily in a corner, like the propeller of an old plane. Jonah fell asleep within minutes, and Zoe's mother drifted off soon after. Zoe lay on her side, her thoughts swirling. Was this what love was like? One part pleasure, two parts pain? Zoe thought of Val's obsession with Gloria. She understood it now. She'd never felt anything like that with Dallas. It had never even occurred to her to make a tumbler about his feet. For one thing, she was pretty sure he waxed them. Zoe laughed softly, and her body relaxed, muscle by muscle. She could feel sleep coming for her at last. But then Jonah, who had apparently not been sleeping, announced into the darkness,
"I'm not going to school tomorrow."
Zoe clenched.
"Shh,"
said her mother, her voice soggy with sleep. "We'll talk about it in the morning."
"Okay, but I'm not going," Jonah said, as defiantly as he could. "And you can't make me."
"We will talk about it in the morning."
"I know you'll try to make me, but I won't. I hate it."
Zoe knew she should keep her mouth shut. But the idea that Jonah hated school was ridiculous. His homeroom teacher, Miss Noel, he worshipped her. Once he'd drawn a picture of her on his arm, like a tattoo.
"You don't hate it, Bug," she said.
"Don't say that."
"I hate it if I say I hate it," he said.
He sat bolt upright and kicked the covers to the bottom of the bed. "Crap," Zoe thought. "Here comes a meltdown."
"Jonah, control yourself," her mother said. "Please." "Only I know if I hate school," he said. "So Zoe shouldn't say I don't hate it. I hate it if I say I hate it."
Zoe got out of bed and stalked across the room, allowing herself a childish outburst of her own. She was carrying around enough pain already. She couldn't add her brother's misery to the pile. Not this time. It wasn't fair. Didn't Jonah know that she missed X too? Didn't he know that she was thinking about him with every breath? On her way to the door, she kicked over the idiotic fan with her bare foot. Behind her, Jonah said,
"See how she just left? Nobody says goodbye."
The morning was a nightmare. Zoe avoided Jonah as she printed an essay for English, but she could hear his shouts of,
"I hate it if I say I hate it,"
ringing through the house. He wouldn't eat, wouldn't brush his teeth, wouldn't get dressed. Zoe felt her mother's impatience rise. As she passed Jonah's bedroom, she saw her mom trying to dress him herself. Jonah refused to cooperate. He stiffened his body like a war protester. Zoe motioned for her mother to come into the hall.
"I can't believe he's being so heinous," she said.
"He's in pain, Zoe," said her mom. We all process pain differently.
Yeah, and he processes it heinously, Zoe said.
Anyway, look, there's no way I can go to work today, said her mom.
Can you afford to take a day off? Said Zoe.
No, but I can't afford a sitter either, said her mother.
And who could I call? All the sitters are going to be in school, which is where children are supposed to be.
Jonah must have overheard them, because he called out from his room.
Could Rufus be my babysitter, maybe? He said. I would never be heinous to Rufus.
Zoe's mom didn't like the idea. She didn't want to take advantage of Rufus's crush on her, probably. But Zoe thought it was genius, and she wanted this morning, this crisis, this escalating Jonah nonsense over with. She called Rufus herself. He sounded surprised by the request. Chainsaw artists are rarely asked to babysit. But before she could say never mind, he had declared the idea to be rad.
Thank God, said Zoe. I was afraid you'd think it was gnarly.
You're making fun of me, I know, said Rufus, laughing. But tell my man Jonah to prepare himself for an epic hang.
20 minutes later, Rufus's van could be heard negotiating the mountainside. Zoe saw the wooden bear affixed to the roof as it rose above the treetops, waving like the queen. At last she was free. She drove the decrepit struggle buggy to school as if it were a race car. Every nerve in her body seemed to be humming. Every song on the radio seemed to be about X. Zoe's and Jonah's schools were nestled next to each other in Flathead Valley near a dense settlement of chain stores, Target, Walmart, Costco, and beef-slinging restaurants that Zoe's mom referred to as the cannibal food court. Sizzler, Five Guys, House of Huns. Students were allowed to eat lunch at the mall once they became juniors. For everyone else, it merely shimmered across the highway like an unreachable promised land. Zoe was a junior, but the thrill of eating in the cannibal food court had lost its shine. It was partly because her mother's ethics had sunk in over the years. Zoe wasn't a vegetarian, but she felt a cloud of guilt whenever she ate meat. And partly because House of Huns was where she'd told Dallas she didn't want to go out anymore. Val had begged Zoe not to see Dallas in the first place. She thought he was cocky and kind of a douche. But Val's relationship with Gloria was so intense that she had a skewed idea of what was generally possible in 11th grade. Zoe loved that Dallas was a caver like her and her dad, that he was fun and uncomplicated, and that, so sue her, you could see his triceps through almost any shirt. When she told Val that she was going to give him a chance, Val said simply,
I weep for you.
They began dating in September, and Zoe soon discovered that there were many sweet things about Dallas. His favorite color was orange. He still slept in pajamas. He used a photo of his mom for the wallpaper on his laptop. Val didn't want to hear any of it. Once, when Zoe and Dallas passed her in the hallway, Zoe sang out,
Still dating!
Val nodded and sang back,
Still weeping!
In November, when her dad died, and she was crying constantly, and everything was so raw and dizzying that she felt like she'd been thrown out of a moving car, Zoe decided to strip away everyone who wasn't essential to her life. And Dallas just wasn't. She broke the news to him at House of Huns, which was a Benihana-type place where shirtless men grunted like barbarians in front of a massive circular grill. At first, Dallas flatly refused to be dumped. He told Zoe she was in too messed up a state to be making mega-life-altering decisions. Zoe had facepalmed, she couldn't help it, and said, Dude, this is in no way a mega-life-altering decision. I know what a life-altering event is, okay? My father just died.
I'm sorry, said Dallas. I didn't mean to compare this to that, to your dad. I just think you're a badass, and you're hot,
and those are, like, the two best things.
Dallas asked if they could still hang sometimes, as friends or whatever. He said it very simply and genuinely. Zoe said, of course. Dallas grinned and told her that there was another girl at school he was kind of into anyway, and that he was pretty sure if he asked her out, she'd say yes. He said Zoe was probably too complicated for him anyway. The air cleared. Dallas then turned his attention to the comments card and the miniature golf pencil that had been left on their table.
How was your meal? Let us know.
Dallas reflected for a moment and wrote,
Solid salad bar.
When Zoe left, he stayed behind to apply for a job. Today, Zoe swung the struggle buggy into the parking lot that connected the schools. She was an hour late, thanks to Jonah's meltdown. She gathered up her books and bags and slammed the car shut, a complicated process that involved pulling the handle up and to the right because the door had been sideswiped by a snowplow and now sagged several inches too low. No one at Jonah's school even looked at Zoe sideways when she told them that he'd be out sick. Everyone knew that Zoe's family had slipped into a dark tunnel. She'd always been an A student, but lately her grades had been sliding. Given the awful stuff that had happened, she found it harder and harder to believe that there was really an earth-shattering difference between an A or a B, or even between a B and a C. Today, Jonah's vice principal, Miss Didier, asked if Zoe was doing okay, with so much compassion, with so much eye contact, that Zoe knew rumors must be circulating about what had gone on at the lake with Stan. God only knew how the story had been twisted in the retellings.
I'm okay, yeah, Zoe told her. Jonah's kind of... not.
Well, look, said the vice principal. This is incredibly scary, upsetting stuff. There's no handbook. But we will do whatever your family needs. Let Jonah know we're thinking about him. Who's with him now?
Our friend Rufus, said Zoe.
The chainsaw guy? Said Miss Didier.
Yes, said Zoe.
But he's... Oh, no, no, I love Rufus, said Miss Didier. I didn't mean to sound critical. He made a moose for me.
By the time Zoe got to the high school, the only period left before lunch was Spanish. Zoe sat between Val and a girl named Ming Yu, who penciled little wings at the corners of her eyes, dressed in layer upon layer of black, and drew pentagrams and 666s on the undersides of her wrists during class. Ming Yu played bass in an all-girl punk band called the Slim Reaper and claimed to be a Satanist. Zoe didn't believe the devil-worshipping part. But sitting down next to Ming Yu now, she wished the girl actually was a Satanist, so she could freak her out.
Hey, Ming Yu, guess where my boyfriend's from?
The Spanish instructor, a slender woman named Miss Shaw, who had what Zoe and Val agreed was by far the best teacher hair, wrapped her wedding ring on the smartboard to get the class's attention. Zoe raised her hand four times in the first 8 minutes, so she could spend the rest of the period staring out at the mountains and thinking about X without being called on. She tried to imagine where he was now. Had he found Stan, or was he still hunting him down? All she could picture was the model of the lowlands that he'd built with Jonah. So she imagined him talking to a Revolutionary War soldier while an orc from Lord of the Rings waved a club nearby. Zoe was terrified for X, but she told herself that she would see him again. She would. Meeting X had convinced her that things were possible. She didn't even know what things, but it didn't matter. Things. She'd take him swimming in Tally Lake. Not just at the dinky, roped-off pebble beach, but in the big blue bowl of the water. She'd go huckleberry picking with him. She'd take him hiking on the High Line in Glacier National Park. She'd tell him all the names of the wildflowers. She'd ask what his tattoos meant. She'd ask if he had ever kissed anyone but her. She was pretty sure he hadn't. His lips had trembled just the slightest bit. His lips were so warm. Had hers been too cold? Had he noticed? Was he disappointed? Okay, she was seriously losing it. When she surfaced from her daydream, Val and Dallas were making bug eyes at her and motioning toward her desk. Zoe looked down and saw a quiz she was supposed to be taking. As soon as the bell rang, Val rushed up to her, but Zoe floated past her and spent the rest of the day in a daze. In the struggle buggy, after school, Val started up again.
Okay, what were you high on in Spanish? You know that quiz counts, right?
Counts how? Said Zoe. Counts toward what? My total life score?
Esta quiz no es me importa para mí.
Yeah, see, even that was terrible Spanish, said Val. Zoe laughed.
Sí, usted eres razón, she said.
Ugh, just stop, said Val. You're mauling a beautiful language. They were crossing farmland on a long roller coaster of a road. The car shook and rattled. The windshield had a spiderweb crack. There was still a rock about the size of a blueberry wedged into the center. And the floorboard on the passenger side had rusted through so that, if you moved the rubber mat, you could actually see the ground fly by underneath. By the time the buggy sputtered up the driveway, Zoe had told Val as much as she could about X, though she substituted aspiring musician for supernatural bounty hunter. It was what she'd told Rufus when he'd shown up unannounced that day. And it seemed plausible, if nobody pressed too hard about why an aspiring musician was on a frozen lake in the middle of a blizzard, and how he'd fought off a murderer. Zoe had never withheld anything from Val before. She told herself she wasn't lying about anything significant. Where X was from and what he was didn't matter as much as who he was, how he'd woken her whole life up and helped her set aside some of her pain. All this from a guy who had never been given anything, ever. She pulled up to the house and turned off the ignition. The buggy bucked and chortled even after she and Val slammed the doors and walked away. Before they could make it up the steps, Rufus stepped outside. He looked weirdly serious. Was something wrong with Jonah? Zoe had to fight an impulse to push past Rufus and run into the house.
Just wanted to give you a heads up, Rufus said.
Oh, hey, Val, what's shaking?
Hey, said Val.
Talk, Rufus, said Zoe. You're scaring me.
No, 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 it's all good, he said. I mean, it's mostly good. I mean, honestly, it's not great. The little guy's just super, super bummed. Like in shock, almost. I couldn't get him out of the house at all, not even a step. He just froze up. He's in real bad shape.
Zoe groaned. He wouldn't go outside after our dad died, she said. I'm not going through that again. I'll give him some tough love.
Actually, said Rufus, I think that might just make things worse.
Zoe ignored him. She liked Rufus, but didn't need him telling her what was best for her own brother.
It's okay, I can fix this, she said.
Jonah just got really tight with that guy X I introduced you to. Val couldn't help but interrupt.
Rufus got to meet X, but I didn't? What kind of hot garbage is that?
The musician dude? Said Rufus. Super cool guy. Epic hair. And I don't blame him for not wanting to talk about his musical inspirations or whatever. I'm an artist too, I get it. You gotta blaze your own trail.
Rufus scratched at his bushy reddish beard, which he allowed to go wild in the winter. It was currently edging perilously close to his eyes.
But, see, this isn't about X anymore, I don't think, he said.
It is, said Zoe impatiently. I know my brother. Rufus shook his head, and his fledgling dreads swung back and forth.
His stubbornness surprised her. In her experience, he disliked confrontation and would go with the flow no matter where the flow happened to be headed.
Look, we talked about X, he said. And honestly, I think him taking off was a bigger deal for you than for Jonah. Jonah liked him, heck yeah. He's bummed he split, heck yeah. But this stuff, the crying and the shell shock and the not leaving the house, this stuff is deeper than that. This thing's got roots like a big-ass tree. This is about something else now.
The front door opened. Jonah hovered near the threshold. He had his shoes on, which could have meant something, or nothing.
I want to talk to you, he told Zoe. I have a question.
He was a single step away from the outside world. A wind came up and rattled the storm door in its frame.
I can't hear you, said Zoe. Come closer.
Rufus shook his head and leaned toward her.
Don't get your hopes up, he whispered. I tried this.
Zoe ignored him. Why hadn't he left already? She waited for her brother to answer.
No, said Jonah. I know what you're trying to do.
I'm not trying to do anything, Bug. I just can't hear you. Rufus turned away, as if he didn't want to see what was about to happen.
He's just not ready, he said. You're playing with matches.
Stop it, Rufus, Zoe said under her breath. You're not his sister. Jonah eyed them all suspiciously.
I have to talk to you, Zoe, he said again. Because of my question.
Just come out on the steps, she said.
You can go right back inside.
Val put her hand on Zoe's shoulder.
Maybe Rufus is right, she said.
Zoe gave Val a look. You too? She focused on Jonah again. He was leaning against the door, his hair flattened into a fan. He pushed the door infinitesimally forward.
Come on, that's right, thought Zoe. Come on, just do it, you little shit.
He pulled it shut again.
You're trying to trick me, he said. I'm not, Bug. Don't call me Bug when you're trying to trick me.
Look, if you can't come out on the steps for 2 seconds, then let's talk later. Your question can't be very important.
I want to know. Later, Jonah.
She hated being cruel, but someone had to get tough with the kid or he was going to turn into a shut-in. When somebody was scared of the water, weren't you supposed to just throw them in the pool? Wasn't that a thing? If it wasn't, it should be.
You stopped calling me Bug, said Jonah. That means you were trying to trick me.
You didn't used to try to trick me. Zoe walked toward the door. Slowly, like someone trying not to frighten a cat. From behind her, she heard Val say worriedly,
What are you doing?
Zoe ignored her and climbed the steps. She heard Rufus say,
I can't watch this.
She ignored him too. She was going to put an end to this before it got any worse. She opened the door. Jonah withdrew farther into the house. There was fear in his eyes. Distrust. Zoe smiled. She held the door open with one foot.
Hug me,
she said. Jonah made a confused face. He shivered as the wind slipped inside. After a moment, he inched forward and held out his arms. Zoe reached for him. She clamped her arms around him and bolted outside. Jonah panicked. He fought and screamed and pulled Zoe's hair. She kept going. She was convinced that what she was doing was right. Later, he would understand. Rufus and Val stared at her like she was insane. She veered away from them. The ground was snowy and rough. She nearly fell. Jonah was heavier than she remembered. She tried to soothe him. She whispered in his ear,
I know you miss X. So do I. But he'll come back. I promise. I promise.